Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on what time you're listening to this. Welcome to the last episode of 2020 for Required Viewing. I'm your host, Shams, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Zach. And today is a special year-end review edition of Required Viewing. However, unlike our previous year, and unlike other podcasts and other TV websites, we are not going to do a typical end of the year review of television this episode. Zach, do you want to explain to our viewers what we plan to do today?
Yes. So we have devised our own list of awards that we will be giving out based on a voting body of two. That's me and Shams. Therefore, every award will likely be a tie unless we happen to have agreed on something, which is unlikely, as our 13 longtime listeners know. So we have a list of awards. They're not the typical awards you would see at the Emmys or the Oscars. We thought we'd have some fun with this because the rest of 2020 wasn't that fun. So we pushed it all to the end. And guess what? You know, we survived 2020. Television survived 2020. And here we are to celebrate some of the best aspects of television in 2020. So, Shams, do you have anything else to add, or shall we get into the first award?
I think we can go ahead and get started. Are we calling them awards or superlatives? I wasn't sure what we wanted.
I don't know. I wrote award on all these. I named them all, and there's they all say awards. So it's like, I mean, they really are superlatives, but you know, they're superlatives that we're giving it as an award, but with no trophy or monetary prize. So I don't know. Is it an award if there's no trophy or incentive to win it?
I think being mentioned on the podcast is a reward on itself.
That's true. So without further ado, let's get into our first award of the night. This is the Goldfish Award, and this will be awarded to the show that everyone was talking about in 2020, but no one will remember a year from now. So Shams, would you like to reveal your pick for the Goldfish Award of 2020?
Absolutely. So I fully watched this show. So I am totally one of those people who was talking about this show and watched it and literally saw it all in over a weekend. And the show, it came out pre-pandemic in that magical time of January and February where we didn't have any idea what was going to happen. And the show is on Netflix because, of course, it's going to be a Netflix show. And the show is, for me, is Love is Blind. Love is Blind was a reality competition.
I'm laughing because someone tried to put that in as a vote for the best of the year.
I mean, in some ways, it's the best. It's arguably the best and worst television you could
have. One of our listeners and former guests is going to hate you for this.
Yeah. So Love is Blind was a reality dating competition where the premise was that the contestants, the men and the women had to meet each other over a glass window, and so they could hear each other but they couldn't see each other, and they had to propose to each other without ever seeing each other. And then it was trying to test this whole concept of is love blind. It was really fun in the moment. It came out right during Valentine's Day, so it was like very appropriate for the season. And it was the type of trashy television that just felt right. But yeah, after like 2 months, you're just like, that show, like, you just realize like there was nothing good about that show. None of the people were interesting. There was nothing memorable. It was just kind of one of those in the moment shows that blows up really quick. And then after 3 weeks, no one cares. And I think it's pretty evident that it's December. And if I would say Love is Blind to someone, they'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, no, I had forgotten that existed. So I actually think your case is, I think, better than mine, which I feel like at the end of these awards, like since we're the only two votes, I think we got to also respond to each other's and say, like, you know, we could either change our vote to agree, which is probably unlikely, or you know, or at least just throw, you know, throw a respect or a throw a shade or a diss on each other's picks. But in that case, yeah, I think yours technically fits. I actually thought you came up with this, the idea for this superlative for Tiger King specifically. So I didn't pick Tiger King because I actually did when that was like being talked about. I actually posted like a prediction. I'm like, this is the Google Trends right now. And like, this is what it's going to look like in 3 months. And just like watch it like do basically the opposite of a V-shaped recovery. But so I actually decided to go with a slightly controversial pick. It's also technically not true because there will be a season 3 in about a year and then everyone's going to be talking about it again. But I'm going with The Boys on Amazon Prime.
I was thinking about The Boys actually.
Yeah. It's, I mean, first of all, okay. Season 1 was like, all right. It played out its premise pretty quickly. Season 2, honestly added nothing. The show is very much a sugar rush of, you know, violence and ridiculousness. And I honestly don't remember a single aspect of the plot or character development. It's just like a blur of, you know, gore and over the top, you know, the superheroes are evil, just like beating that theme to death. So yeah. Maybe people will be talking about it again as soon as season 3 comes out, but whenever they stop making seasons of this, it's like candy, like it's going to crash quickly. So yeah. All right. So I'm hearing a respect for that pick from you.
No, I had the ones I had thought about were Love is Blind, Tiger King, and The Boys. Tiger King, I think, has some viability because I think it will actually just stay. I think it's too memeable that it'll still stick around.
Making like a movie out or something?
Yeah, movie and stuff. Yeah, so I think Tiger King will have longevity. The Boys, I think, is one of those shows where, like, yeah, like when the season comes out, everyone will be like, oh, yeah, The Boys. But like, I don't think anyone is like talking in between season. There's going to be like, I mean, hardcore fans will, but no one's going to really care like what's happening between season 2 and season 3. But I just think Love is Blind, though, just kind of trumped them in terms of like, the initial rush of like everyone has to see this, and then, you know, literally 6 months later, if those contestants walked in front of me, I'd have no idea who they were.
And was that one canceled, or are they going to do another one?
I don't know what exactly they're doing. So I know that they're actually making a show based off one. They're going to follow one of the couples after they get married, as they're married, because one of the couples was like the most likable couple and everyone likes them. So they're making a show about them. But I don't know anything else. But I actually don't feel like it's a show you can really, I think it's one of those shows like Joe Millionaire where it happens once and you just get that one shot at it.
Well, the next award is called the Carrie and Kerry Award, named obviously after Kerry Russell and Carrie Coon of The Americans and Leftovers, respectively. This award will be given to the most criminally underappreciated performance of the year. And Shams, I will let you go first, since this is the one that I already know what you're going to pick. And this was essentially invented and named for one specific reason. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to rant too much about this because I've ranted about this, I think, on 3 different episodes already, or 2, I forget how many. But technically it's for Kim Wexler, or aka Rhea Seahorn, from Better Call Saul. It's also for Better Call Saul as a whole, I guess. I don't understand why, not even just, I mean, the Emmys ignoring her this year is still, to me, one of the biggest. I'll never understand the Emmys ever again, because I don't know what more you need to see. But beyond just the Emmys, it's like, it's really weird to me that Better Call Saul, people like me, I think, do give it its respect, but like, I don't understand why people who really love Breaking Bad haven't like come around to it. Because like, I could understand the initial like hesitation, like first season, second season, but now we're on like season 5, and it's like, I don't know what more you need to know. That it's like, if you like Breaking Bad, they're not the same exact show, but like, if you're someone who can like Breaking Bad, then like 95% chance you're gonna like Better Call Saul. And I just don't understand how like it, that audience retention has not carried over to the show at this point. And, you know, it's on Netflix even, the, so it's like, I'm genuinely just confused as to like how people haven't just like made this the biggest show on television, like Breaking Bad became.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to maybe get a final season bump. Well, especially when it comes to the Emmys, you know, how that was, you know, the same thing that happened with Carrie Russell in the final season of The Americans, even though she didn't win. Matthew Rice won. Oops, hit my mic. Matthew Rice won for that final season, but the two of them were snubbed for quite a while until that last season. So, do you know what's the latest on the final season of Better Call Saul? Has that been affected by the pandemic?
Oh no, it has been affected by the pandemic. I think the question is, I think it's still going to come out in 2021 though.
Any have they started filming or anything, or what's the
no? But I think the one thing they said is that it's going to be the longest season. It's going to be 13 episodes. So what they may do is they may do like a 7-6 type thing.
Or they similar. The, Breaking Bad did the same thing.
So that we'll see, but it'll be the longest season. And yeah, but I don't, yeah, I'm guessing it's going to come out end of 2021.
That timeline would make sense. All right. Well, for my pick, and I swear I did not do this intentionally. My pick for the Carrie and Carrie Award, is going to Jim Carrey. I swear I did not realize. I think I actually named the thing after I had picked Jim Carrey. Yeah. Not for playing Joe Biden on SNL, but for playing Mr. Pickles on a show called Kidding, which aired its second and final season earlier this year. The show as a whole, I think I've talked about it multiple times on this podcast before. It is very good. And this is Jim Carrey's best performance, since Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is at least one of my top five favorite films. So if you're a fan of that movie, or Jim Carrey as a whole, you should watch Kidding. It's great. And that's all I have to say about that. So let's move on to the next award, which is, I didn't do this intentionally, but we're kind of alternating between positive and negative. So the next award, is the Delusions of Grandeur Award. This is awarded to the show that tried its hardest to be a prestige drama, but absolutely failed. So Shams, time for some shots fired. Let's go.
So this superlative basically was like, what's a show that tries to be like an HBO show, but fails. But amusingly, the show that I could really just kind of put my thing on it is an actual HBO show. And so I didn't watch the show willingly. This was a show that my mother and my sister watched, and they would watch in the living room. And so like I literally just kind of watched it kind of with them.
So there's like three HBO shows that in my mind you could be talking about right now, and mine's also an HBO show. So yeah, I'm really curious which one you went
with. I know
with.
What your one is, I think. So I don't think it's okay. This one. But my show is, and it just finished recently, is the miniseries The Undoing.
That's not mine, but that's what I was hoping you were going with, because I highly respect this pick.
Yeah, so I didn't, yeah. And so to be fair, I did not intensely watch this show. This was a show where it was kind of on in the background, and I was kind of just like not fully paying attention. I fully admit that. That said, I mean, this is a show with Hugh Grant and Nicole Kidman, and David E. Kelly as the showrunner. And it tries so hard to be like, it's serious, like adult. This is an adult show, and it's mostly just like absolute soap opera trash. with just Nicole. Like, basically what I realized is that when you put in like Hollywood A-listers, but you have a soap opera script, you can really trick a lot of people into just thinking that it's like quality.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's that sums up my thoughts. So it must be good. And it's like, no, like, it's like if you change the actors in this, the script would be just as bad and you would notice it just how bad it is. Such a ridiculous and dumb plot, which is so like, it's like by the end of it, I was just like, why the hell do we even have like these six episodes?
That show was actually, it was sitting at number 20 on my best 20 new shows of 2020 list, just simply because like there, you know, there weren't a lot of great shows that were worth. So I figured I'd put it on number 20, but then I actually just watched another show, which will be mentioned slightly later on. And it got bumped off the top 20. So it's not even on my best 20 shows of the new, the new year of 2020 list anymore. So, yeah, ironically, both of our picks for Delusions of Grandeur, fake HBO drama, were both actual HBO dramas. So, you know what I'm going to pick, right?
Yeah.
I think we've ranted about that. Well, no, you actually ended up not watching it, right?
I never watched it because of you.
Right. So I had, did we have Brian on the show for this? All right, Brian, this one's for you. The Outsider is the biggest delusion of grandeur I have ever seen. It was at least The Undoing had like, well, first of all, you only had to put up with it for six episodes. And like, at least it had like something going for it, which is like, you know, did he do it or did he not? Even though it was really obvious that he did it. But then even then you at least have like Hugh Grant putting on like a pretty good performance. So it was like, you can just view it as like, I'm watching Hugh Grant be a good actor with a bad script. The Outsider just like had none of that, because like they blew the entire premise in the first two episodes, and then after that it just got dumber and dumber, and the, you know, the actors in it could not carry it, because it just slowly every episode got worse. And we've already ranted about this before, so that's the pick. Neither The Outsider or The Undoing, both on HBO, made it into the top 20 list. So, but I think by the time this episode is edited and put online, and you're listening to this, my best 20 new shows of 2020 list should be online at blackrook.com. So, you will not find The Outsider or The Undoing. You will find 20 shows that are better than both of those, including one reality show. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
part of that is kind of an FU. I just wanted to have it on there as an FU to The Outsider.
I think the thing though is, to be fair, I picked this, I was the one who created this category, but I think there's probably a lot more shows that could get this thing, but I never saw them because I could probably figure out very easily that like, oh, this show's not gonna be good.
Yeah, I don't remember what I was considering for this. I think it was just between The Undoing and The Outsider. And yeah, so I think those were the only two I considered. I couldn't think of any other good ones. Yeah, probably because I didn't see them.
All right. So the next award is, the title of this award made me justify my pick, because I actually think you're going to not like my pick. We'll see. But the title of this award is the Ben Linus Award. So it's the award for the best villain of the year. So I don't like the term villain, but you use Ben Linus. So I'm like, well, Ben Linus is not a typical villain. Pure villain, I would say.
He was a villain in the first two seasons he was in.
Sure. But so you're not going to like my pick. But I'm still good. I'm going to pick it. I don't care. But
all right, we'll see.
My pick is Forrest from Devs, played by Nick Offerman.
No, I mean, I feel like that works. That's,
well, because he's So he's an, I would say he's an antagonist. He's not a villain.
Okay, true. Yeah. Mine is definitely more more traditional villain, but that's fair.
Right.
I respect the performance.
Right. And, I don't consider Nick Offerman's character and Devs to be a pure villain. So it's a bit dicey, but if you're going to call it the Ben Linus Award, and Ben Linus, in my opinion, yeah, the first time he appears, he's a pure villain. But I think over the course of the show, you see that he's not as clear cut. And Nick Offerman, I think, I don't know if he's going to get any award love or anything, but I think it's his best performance in any medium or any show. I think he plays it perfectly. I think he's really scary when he needs to be in certain scenes. There's like specific moments where he's just like in a room with a character and just like able to just use his like physicality to just like have this like sinister presence of him.
And yeah, presence is a great word for that. Yeah, performance.
I just thought his presence was just kind of the right fit. And I think he may not be a pure villain, but in terms of just like antagonist, he was my favorite antagonist performance of the year.
Nice. Yeah, no, I respect the pick. And I think you'll respect mine as well, because I think that by far the best villain on our screens this year, and perhaps for the past few years, but out of, you know, the past few years, is Tony Dalton in Better Call Saul as Lalo Salamanca. This also, I think, was I considered for most underappreciated performance, because most of the, you know, villain love in Better Call Saul goes to, Gustavo Fring, Giancarlo Esposito, you know, rightfully for his performance in Breaking Bad. But this season on Better Call Saul, if you haven't seen it, all eyes are on, when they're not on Ray Seahorn, they're on Tony Dalton as Lalo. And in particular, and I think the climactic scene of the entire season between both of them, is just phenomenal. The definition of phenomenal television.
So. Yeah, I mean, both Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad have done an incredible job of creating like just these epic villain antagonist characters where like, you know, like you technically don't want them to win, but like you're kind of like respect them just as like villains.
Yeah. And Lalo is like, I mean, it's different. Like, Gus Fring was like that in that he's like a gentleman villain. But like Lalo is, I think, unique. Like I actually think he is probably the best TV villain since Gus Fring on Breaking Bad. And it's just like, it's just new. Like the amount of like charm that he oozes while being a villain is not something I've seen, or at least not something I can remember anything that comes close to it. The scenes with him in the last few episodes, especially the one between him and Ray Seahorn, that has to be one of the scenes of the year for me.
Yeah. I don't want to go too much into it for the audience, but yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, everyone should just go see Better Call Saul. We've said it a lot. It's on Netflix, people. You have Netflix.
It's on Netflix. No excuse. All right. The next award is the Not So Great Expectations Award. As you can probably guess by the name, this is awarded to whatever, show, actor, soundtrack, whatever aspect most exceeded low expectations this year. So Shams, you've been going first for all of them. No reason to stop that. Go ahead.
Okay. So technically the finale it airs tomorrow. So it hasn't finished, but I'm confident in this because I went into the season.
I know what we're talking about because we're recording on a Thursday.
Yeah. I was just watching the show because of the IP. I enjoyed the first season, but it was whatever. The second season has blown me away. And maybe it's because of the low expectations. But the show I'm talking about is The Mandalorian, which has been way better than it's been the best Star Wars content I think I've seen. Maybe since 1983.
Yeah. Which you were completely alive and going to the movies.
I was totally alive back then. But specifically, and this just happened last week, Last week, Bill Burr had a guest spot. Well, he was in the first season. He appears again the second season. And shockingly, Bill Burr has an incredible performance that I never expected out of him or out of any character in Star Wars. And the show has balanced like being a Star Wars show with high quality like action set pieces for a television show, while also like actually just like creating this like interesting narrative that like I don't even care that like there was these sequels of movies and stuff, like whatever. It's like I just care about like the narrative of like what they're trying to create. And it's become to me it's the closest thing for me that I'm not saying is at Game of Thrones level, but it's the closest thing to me of like a show that combines high quality production with like an interesting overarching narrative with like very solid acting performances. And I just did not see it coming because the first season was just like kind of fun, but it was like kind of like, you know,
it was the Baby Yoda show.
Yeah. Right? It was a Baby Yoda show. Exactly.
Now it's truly Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, now it's also its own show. Now it's like a real like space Western samurai cowboy mishmash show, which is what the original Star Wars was. It was like a mishmash of like all these genres. And Mandalorian is like Star Wars has always just been like mishmashing genres into like this like space opera setting. And so, yeah, I'm shocked. And, you know, to its credit, like the show, I think, deserves its success now. Like, I think the first season I was kind of like, I don't know if the show's that good, but the show deserves all its audience and its praise and making Disney billions of dollars in merchandise.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I can't say, I respect the show. I can't say I would have picked that for this because I was pretty excited for it going in. So my expectations weren't low.
For this season? Or for the show overall? I had low expectations for this season.
I was pretty excited. My pick, I think, is I don't know if you've seen this. I doubt you have because I think it's the quintessential example of a show that like you read the premise, you hear the name, and you just can't imagine how it could possibly be good. And then people just keep telling you it's good until you finally listen and you start watching it. And then you watch all 10 episodes in this, I think under 24 hours for me. On a work day. I like snuck in an episode at lunch. And the show I'm talking about, another reason has super low expectations is the show is on Apple TV Plus, Shams. So the show I'm talking about is Ted Lasso.
I've heard a lot of people talk about Ted Lasso. I've seen some clips. I don't really get it, but sure.
So yeah, it is. Inexplicably, unexplainably fantastic. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I have to read here. Let me read the fucking summary, you know. Small-time football coach Ted Lasso is hired to coach a professional soccer team in England despite having no experience coaching soccer. That's the, you know, one sentence description when you Google the show. I do not give a shit about sports shows. I don't give a shit about soccer or football. I do like England, so that was, I think, maybe my shoe into the show. Anything British is a, you know, a hook for me. It's just good. Like, I can't explain it. It's very well written. It has that similar attention to detail writing that Vince Gilligan has in Better Call Saul, but obviously it's a very different tone. It's a comedy, but it's a comedy, and it's a like Bob Ross level of like optimism comedy. And yet it also delves into some dark places, in this almost in the same way as Barry. And yeah, it's honestly, it cracked the top 10 of the year for me. fantastic show. Lowest expectations possible, and extremely solid show. So by sheer gap, I give this the not so great expectations award.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I mean, I'm 99% sure that this character, this entire character was created as just like a marketing promotional thing like 6 years ago. Like when the NBC bought the English Premier League, they hired Jason Sudeikis to be like, hey, we want to do this like comedic thing of like an American guy trying to understand soccer. And they did this like 5 years ago. And those commercials weren't that funny. And somehow they developed a TV show out of it.
And I don't know what it is. Like I don't even know the writer behind it, but yeah, it's just so good. The performances are all great. And it just has more soul than any show I've seen in a while. And it's, yeah, I think you should check it out. Cause it's just, you can't explain how good it is. Yeah, I was actually like surprised too when I put out the vote for the final award we're going to give out. A couple people threw Ted Lasso in there, and I hadn't seen it at the time, so I had to burn through it. And I'm really happy I did, because now The Undoing is knocked out of the top 20 for me.
All right,
I'm very spiteful toward HBO this year. They had one or two good things. All right.
So the title of this award is a bit misleading in the sense that this is not the final one we're going to talk about, but the title itself is called the Grand Finale Award. And I actually should have maybe asked you this up front. This was only meant for shows which were like multi-season shows, like new, like season one shows were not allowed for this.
Yeah, no, I said that. I wrote down for the multi-season show with the best ending this year.
So this isn't just, this is a show and with the best ending, like the series finale.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
My pick fits that.
Yeah. So I'll be interested. I was actually stuck between kind of two comedies, actually.
I was stuck between three comedies.
So I kind of picked this mainly because we kind of started the year with the show in some ways, and I also feel like I haven't given the show its credit because I've been kind of more of a detractor about it than you.
I think you picked the same as me.
Did you pick The Good Place?
I did.
Okay.
It was the first show to end this year. Honestly, the first show to air this year, and I was debating between. I'm sure Schitt's Creek was the other one you were debating between. So I was debating between Schitt's Creek, The Good Place, and Kidding, which I already mentioned. I gave it to The Good Place because I feel like the spirit of this award is all about the shows that have been running for a while that really stick the landing. And for me, I think The Good Place fits that the best because when we did our episode on what makes a good ending, like, you have like our quintessential good ending is The Americans, where all of the seasons, you know, leading up to the finale were building to that moment. And so with Schitt's Creek, I just don't actually feel like the whole show was building toward like a really solid ending. Like for Schitt's Creek, the whole season was good, but it's not about the ending. Kidding had a phenomenal ending. I actually think the ending, the final episode, was better than the finale of The Good Place, but it was a two-season show. So it's not like the ending carried the weight of the four seasons like The Good Place did. Sorry, the four seasons of The Good Place, not the four seasons total landscaping. I understand how some people might be confused because there's so many four seasons. Sorry, that's my political joke of the day. Shams, you go ahead. Why did you pick The Good Place?
So you kind of said it, but like I think the way I look at it is, and The Americans is like a good example in the sense of now that the show is over, right? I think it's easy for me to recommend it to someone because I know like where it ends. It's not one of the shows where I can just be like, oh yeah, like the first two seasons are great, but then it kind of just sucks afterwards, right? So I think that's an important thing, that it's a show that the ending maintains the integrity of the show's quality, right? And I think that's important. And I think that's rare, to be honest, these days. I have actually found myself to be pretty disappointed with how I think either shows end too late or they don't know how to end properly a lot. Like multi-season shows, like 3-4 season, more season shows. So I think for The Good Place, I don't think it's like the greatest ending or ever or whatever. It's not The Americans, right? But, you know, I think it does what it needs to do to maintain the integrity of the show and wraps things up well enough. And also, it, like, if you look at it from start to finish, you can kind of see that there's a cohesive kind of line between point A and point B. And I think that's important. So I think it kind of does like the essentials of what you want a series finale to do. And so in some ways it's like, I kind of just wish more shows were able to do what The Good Place does.
Yeah. And it definitely, Michael Schur definitely says what he, you know, he says what he wants to say with the show, and the ending does a really good job of capping off the point that he's making. For those of you who aren't familiar with The Good Place, this is the show that brought philosophy to comedic television. And it is a phenomenal show that you should check out. I believe it's also all on Netflix now.
It's all on Netflix now.
All actually, on Netflix. No,
it may
no
be
excuse.
Going on the Peacock. I forget if it's on the Peacock.
We will fact check that later. For now, it's all on Netflix in our minds.
I think it's on Netflix now, but by the time you air this, because the Peacock comes, I think the Peacock starts taking shows off Netflix starting 2021. So like The Office, all right, for instance, well, comes onto the Peacock starting January 1st, 2021.
So, all right, well, you have 1 week from whenever this airs.
I also in case it wasn't evident, I just am really trying to find ways to just say the word peacock a lot, because I find it hilarious that a multi-billion-dollar media conglomerate decided to name their streaming service the Peacock.
I do find that slightly hilarious in an immature way as well. So the final award, and the one you've all been waiting for, this is the first annual Required Viewing Show of the Year Award. I have, I've taken the votes from our audience of 13 people. And by that, I mean my Instagram followers and various people that I texted. So it's a very select audience panel. And we have asked them what their pick for the best show of the year. This could be anything, overall show, whether it's a miniseries or not. Me and Shams also threw in our opinion, but I don't think it necessarily changed the vote at all. So the pick for Required Viewing Show of the Year is The Queen's Gambit. Shams, what do you think?
Recency bias.
I do think...
I think there's definitely a Netflix bias.
So
there's a Netflix recency bias. I do think it's a very, let me put it this way, it's not trash television, so I can live with the audiences picking.
No, I mean it's high quality. The Queen's Gambit is definitely on my, I'll say it's very, very high on my best 20 new shows list. I haven't tried comparing it to like Better Call Saul and the ongoing things, because it is a miniseries and that's fundamentally hard to compare. Let me know if do you agree with this, or can you think of a counterexample? I genuinely think this is easily the best miniseries Netflix has ever produced. I can't even think of one that is remotely even arguable.
When you say Netflix has produced it, then yeah, because I'm trying to. Yeah, I'd have to search the Netflix catalog, but yeah.
The directing of this.
There's certain miniseries on Netflix, but they're not Netflix produced, so yeah, they wouldn't count.
Yeah, no, I mean the some of the other ones that I can name that were on Netflix are. Were originally on Showtime or FX.
So yeah, I think that's fair. It's taken them 10 years, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in a way, part of this is really, I mean, Netflix doesn't really get the credit for this. This was, okay. So there's two people who get a lot of credit for this being good. And the first is obviously Anya Taylor-Joy. I don't think there's enough we can say about her performance in this, because it really does carry the whole thing. The other is Scott Frank, who is like straight up veteran of the film industry, who's gone to TV recently. He did Godless before this on Netflix, which actually that might be the next like best miniseries Netflix has made, which was also Scott Frank. So the Queen's Gambit it's just so well directed. The soundtrack's great. The performance is great. I think the writing is very good. It's one of those shows. It's actually similar to Ted Lasso in this respect, where Ted Lasso is a sports show that's not about sports, and The Queen's Gambit is a chess show that's not about chess. But so Shams, how you've not actually finished Queen's Gambit?
I haven't finished it because I'm going very slow, because I found the first episode very boring.
The one without Anya Taylor-Joy?
Yeah. Well. First of all, Anya Taylor-Joy, I've already gotten over her, because like I got really into her after The Witch, but then everything after The Witch I've just found to be very her eyes just do right. have to act for her, and it's just kind of like annoying to me now.
All right, well, prepare to get back into her when you actually watch the show that you're complaining about right now.
No, I like, trust me, I was into her The Witch 5 years ago, and then she did Split and Thoroughbreds and Emma, and I just, yeah, I'm over it.
So wait, which episodes have you actually seen?
The first two. This is hipster me, because again, I've known about her for the last 5 years, and I've been watching her for the last 5 years, and everyone's just discovering her now, and I'm just like, bro, this is like 5 years old news. Her eyes are weird. Like, that's the thing. That's her thing.
All right, your opinion will become valid after you actually watch the fourth episode.
So. But I'm okay with it, because there's a lot more worse options that anyone could pick.
Do you want to explore some of the worst options that people submitted? No, I won't. I won't call anyone out. No. Well, I already did. I did call out one of our former guests for putting Love is Blind into the mix here.
No, that's understandable, because Love is Blind, like I said, is the best and the worst of us. So I can understand
That's kind of what he said.
It's the best. It reveals the best and the worst of us.
So, it's perfect trash.
Yeah, but I think this was probably the most, with the pandemic and everything, this was easily probably the most consumption of television that has ever happened in the history of television. I'm not talking about a person, I'm talking about like just at a societal level. I don't know. I think when they do all the metrics and numbers at the end of the year, we're just going to see just how much of a massive rise viewership across all the platforms went up. I think it's evident by the fact that Netflix has been so huge, but then this year alone, Disney Plus is already at 90 million subscribers, which is crazy. And the other platforms are each going to heading double digits very soon. And so I think we're in a very interesting time where I don't know if – I know for someone like you, it's going to be very difficult, because you feel more of a thing to keep up with all the new shows than I do. But there's just going to be an overload of content across all these platforms, and I don't know how anyone's going to keep up.
I don't know. Yeah. I actually feel like I watched less television this year. Just because I think there was a slowdown in like good content. Well, actually, no, I think I ended up watching the same as last year, but it's very much driven by.
Right, but for you, it's, you and I, it's different because we're at high levels.
I have a quota. Like at the end of the year, I put out my list, and right. at the end of each year, I do one more show than previous. So right. It's kind of like I need to watch 20 at least 20 shows to have a best new shows of 2020 list. And that's just new shows. That's not like Better Call Saul and The Good Place that are returning shows.
Right. But I think the average person's, and I will have seen a lot more television this year than any year before.
Now, I will say I'm comparing my best of 2020 list to best of 2019. And just like the lower numbers, I actually feel like the higher numbers, like the 19th and 20th best show, I feel like are not as good as the 18th and 19th on my 2019 list. So I'm feeling overall 2019 was a better year overall for television, but I'm not exactly. I mean, I guess 2019 had Chernobyl. So like that's
2019 was a better year.
It's hard to beat that. But even like, I think on both the high end and the low end, like the lower stuff in 2019 was higher quality. Like I'm trying to, I don't even remember what, let me look up my list. Well, all of my lists are on blackrock.com. Hopefully the 2021 is actually up by the time I put this podcast out. Yeah, so 2019, number 19 was The Boys. I did the same thing last year where I put something that wasn't great at the bottom. But then it's like Good Omens. The Witcher was 16. What We Do in the Shadows was season one was number 14 last year. So if that's like the cutoff, I think. And then like, let me just look. No spoilers for my current list, but well, actually number, let's see, like number 15. Okay, so number 15, or maybe this is 14, I'm not sure, is Hollywood on Netflix. So yeah, there's a pretty big difference in quality.
I forgot. That's actually, that could have been a show. I totally forgot that show existed.
Yeah, I think it was all right.
The Witcher, right. See, The Witcher, The Mandalorian and The Witcher are the same. Like, so Witcher season 2, I have maybe a front runner next year for that low expectations because... You know, that's another show where I have very, like, I like it, but I'm really just watching because of the IP. And I have very low expectations going to season 2. But it very much well could pull up a Mandalorian and just, like, shock me.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I hope it does. That could be good. So, all right. Well, it looks like we've survived 2020.
Did we?
Guess we'll... Well, I don't know. It's a Thursday. It's Thursday, the 17th of December as we record this.
I'm not counting anything at
this. I mean, if people are listening to this right now, it means I've survived slightly more days because it's going to take me a while before I put this out.
Sure.
And so I guess in theory, we will probably make it another 2 weeks.
By the way, congrats to us for promoting voter registration for our audience so that we could get
out the vote. Yes, we single-handedly won.
So just to kind of do a little quick forecasting, with the COVID situation and all, and a lot of shows getting delayed, do you think that next year is gonna be hard for new shows to break out? Because I think there's just going to be a lot of old shows, like a lot of shows will just be coming out next year that were supposed to come out this year, like Succession, Barry, all these like great shows. That do you think that it's going to be hard for a new show to like a Queen's Gambit to come out because too much of the thing is just going to be dominated by recurring series?
Yeah, well, I do think that could be the case, but I think for a different reason. I feel like a lot of the shows that became like when I say hits, I mean like let's say conversational hits, not necessarily ratings, not necessarily critics, but like, you know, shows like, well, Queen's Gambit was a hit in all three of those in terms of viewership, conversation and critical acclaim. But you know, this year had a lot of shows like Normal People that, you know, I think became popular as a result of the timing of that and people being isolated. I think Ted Lasso benefits from that quite a bit because shows that are the appetite for the dark, like anti-hero genre, and just shows that are like unrelentingly dark, like Black Mirror and Game of Thrones, has almost inverted to the point of this year, the, you know, what's in is quote unquote wholesomeness, even on Reddit. That's like the new, you know, the new buzzword. And like, so Ted Lasso is like a, you know, Bob Ross, it's all about wholesomeness, even the Queen's Gambit to some extent. I won't spoil anything, but like, a lot of the conversation around the show is actually about how wholesome it is, which is kind of funny given that it's a show about a drug addicted orphan and an alcoholic. But yeah, it is fundamentally, it has an optimistic tone about it, you know, in the, as a whole. And I'm just looking at some of the other shows that I have on my, you know, this best of the year list. And like, you know, other than Lovecraft Country and like stuff like that, and I guess Mrs. America. Most of these shows have a lot more optimism to them than, you know, in previous years. And I think that we don't have the, you know, the timing of COVID and like this like universal struggle that everyone's going to be going through. I mean, okay, we're saying this as if the pandemic's going to end at the start of next year, but like, whenever it does end, I think is the true point of the question. Like, you know, post COVID world, what does television look like? I just don't think people are going to go back to having different tastes, which makes it harder for these like new shows to break out. Cause right now I think the success, a lot of these shows is about people who are all kind of looking for the same thing.
Yeah.
That's my philosophy for the day.
Yeah.
So, I agree. We've been talking for a while. I think it's time to sign off for the last time in 2020. So we will see you all in 2021. If we make it.
New year, new.
Do you have
us.
A better? Yeah. Well, no. It's gonna be new year, another new pope, right? That's how we started this year. Remember?
Oh shit! New pope was. I kept thinking new pope was last year. Shit.
Nah. Well, it was last year if you count the start of the year as COVID. Shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. New year. Well, I don't know. New year, new pope. New year, new president.
That'll be our first. Oh, did you hear the news that they're talking about Veep might return?
Oh, I thought they were just doing like a.
I don't know how substantial that rumor is, but
that'd be the dumbest thing.
Yeah, because I mean, you can't. You literally cannot write anything funnier than the Four Seasons total landscaping. So I don't see how any show, any comedy about politics is doomed to fail because nothing will ever be funnier than that.
I think they're just going to do like a special episode. I thought they were just going to do like a fake episode. I don't know. They're not going to, they can't bring that show back.
I would buy that. Yeah. If there was like a one-off special like a for one-off Veep, special, I'd watch that. Yeah. All right. Well,
see. Yeah.
That's it. Should we just ramble ourselves off?
Yeah, I mean, you should just cut this at some point whenever you want to.
Yeah. About now seems good.
Yeah. All right. See you guys.